Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. If in this year, 2006, you're thinking about buying a new vehicle, and whether we're talking there about brand new or something that just will be new to you, you haven't quite made up your mind about what it is you want, or maybe you do have some ideas, but you still have some questions, we'll try to help you out with some information this morning in this part of Focus 580. One of the things that you will want to include in your research, your database as you think about your car, probably would want to be the Consumer Reports magazine April 2006 issue, because it is their annual car issue. They've been doing this for quite a long time now, rating cars in a number of categories, coming up with the things that they think are their best overall picks in different categories, and then looking at a number of other things like safety and reliability and mileage, other sorts of things that you might want to take into account as you were thinking about what kind of car really works well for you and fits into your budget. In this part of Focus, we have as our guest Michael Quincy. He's Automotive Content Specialist at Consumer Reports. He is chiefly responsible for making sure that all of the automotive data and the information is up to date for Consumer Reports Online, for their special publications, and for Consumer Reports Magazine. He's also very much involved in the CARS database and its constant update, and also providing extra content to make their web assets just as informative as possible. He also recently authored Consumer Reports' first ever weblog from Detroit's North American International Auto Show, and does a lot of interviews, has been interviewed a lot on radio and television and for print. And he's joining us this morning by telephone. So we'd be happy to answer questions. I know he will do his best if you'd like to call in. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have that toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. At any point here, you got questions, you can give us a call. Mr. Quincy, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking to us.
Oh, it's all my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
We appreciate it. Well, just overall, now people can, they can go out and get the magazine, or if they don't want to do that, they can go down to the library and get the magazine and take a look at it. But just real quick, maybe we might mention your top picks. These are, when you take the cars, you look at a variety of concerns, as we said, things like reliability, customer satisfaction. You take into account things like gas mileage and so forth. And in different categories, you have some sedans, you have a pickup truck, you have an SUV. You have identified particular models that you think overall are the best bet. And it looks to me like, in fact, they're all foreign nameplates. In fact, I think they're almost all Asian nameplates. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're made in Japan, but they're Hondas and Acuras and Infinities and Toyotas and Subarus. That looks like it.
Yes, actually, in the April issue of Consumer Reports, we have a two-page spread on our top picks for this year. And as you mentioned, I don't have to repeat that we go through these cars very thoroughly. We put more than 6,000 miles on them during our testing, and we run them through 50 individual tests on all these cars, and what came out were top picks for the Honda Civic in a sedan less than $20,000, a Honda Accord we like, the Acura RTL, the Infiniti M35, a whole bunch of these models that did very well in our testing, had at least average or better reliability in our annual survey, and didn't fail any crash tests if they were run through any of those tests.
Well, so it should, if you want an economy sedan, if you're willing to pay the money for a luxury sedan, if you want an SUV, you want a pickup truck, there's a minivan here. The green car, maybe to no one's surprise, would be the Toyota Prius. So those are your overall picks. And again, if people want to see what it is you think are the best overall values, those are the ones.
And probably what's most important, at least from my perspective, is the most fun to drive car. That would be the Subaru. Subaru and Impreza WRX and STI, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that one.
Okay, and that's just if you want something that's agile and sporty, and if that's really what you're looking for, would be the car you would recommend.
And it's important for all your listeners and all Consumer Reports surveys, Consumer Reports subscribers to know that we at Consumer Reports love to drive. We love fun cars, and that's why we have this category. We didn't want all our fun to go unpublished.
Yeah. Just real quick to ask a question about the Prius. It's a car that has gotten a lot of attention. It has proven very popular. At least there are a lot of people who are lined up to buy them. And if for nothing else, because of the price of gasoline, there is more interest in alternative kind of vehicles. So whether we're talking about the gas electric hybrid or we're talking about the flexible fuel vehicles, or I suppose there are still some people who are thinking about the possibility of diesel. So all that is now going into the mix. Toyota obviously has decided they're going to put a lot of resources into producing these cars and hope that in the relatively near future here, a big chunk of their sales are going to be hybrid car, gas-electric hybrids like this. Do these cars have enough of a track record, have been on the road enough so that you can say something about how reliable they are, given the fact that it is a relatively new model and has not been around as long as a more conventional internal combustion engines?
Exactly. You bring up a good point. And in Consumer Reports Reliability Survey, we actually found that the hybrid models from Toyota and Honda have done extremely well in our reliability survey. And these are cars that have an average of about only about 4% of the owners in our survey showed any problems with their Toyota Prius or Civic Hybrid. 4% is minuscule. It's such a tiny amount of people that are saying they have any problems with it, and it's in sharp contrast to some of the models that were among the bottom ranking in our reliability, and that would be the Infiniti QX56 SUV with more than 40% of the owners saying they had problems. So you compare 4% with 40%, you can see what a range it is.
The other thing that I think has generated some controversy about these cars is that apparently for those people whose main concern, their number one thing is gas mileage, there have been some complaints that they feel that they haven't gotten the mileage that they feel that they were promised, which leads to questions about, well, how exactly is it that the mileage is estimated? And the concern there is that it's not done. It's done in a testing laboratory. It's not done on real world driving conditions. And depending on how you drive, well, that's going to affect the mileage. How critical an issue is that? And has this? Do you think that this car, as far as mileage goes, fuel consumption goes, has been oversold?
Well, I think you have to kind of take a step back when you're looking at fuel economy. Consumer Reports does our own fuel economy tests. We think that they're much more realistic than what the government does. However, people should know that the automakers are required to post the EPA numbers on their window stickers. So it's not like the automakers are saying, oh, you know, we get great fuel economy and the government says so. They have to put them on there. And many, many Toyota Prius owners have said, you know, I'm not getting near what the government says I'm getting. I'm not getting 60 miles per gallon. And we found that we did a study a few months ago where we looked at what the EPA predicted for fuel economy for cars and what Consumer Reports actually got. And we found that there were shortfalls in miles per gallon in 90% of the vehicles we tested, and it included most makes and models. But you're right about the EPA. Their technology is based on 1970s assumptions. They don't account for how many people drive today. The automakers, they test prototype vehicles that can yield better mileage than the consumer can get. So it's the cards are definitely stacked, not necessarily in consumers' favor, but that's why we have Consumer Reports, which is an independent test facility out here in Connecticut, where we do our own fuel economy testing, and it's based in the real world. It's not based inside a building.
Okay. Well, our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580, Michael Quincy. He's automotive content specialist for Consumer Reports. Their annual auto issue is out now. It's the April issue of Consumer Reports magazine, where they give their ratings of new cars. There's also information in here about the things they consider to be good bets and bad bets as far as used cars are concerned, and a lot of other kinds of information. So if you're thinking about buying a new or used vehicle, this would probably help. And, of course, here on the show, questions are welcome, and we're full up with callers. The lines are full, so we'll get right to it, starting with someone on a cell phone and on line number one. Hello.
Hi. I was really pleased to see the article you had in this issue of the actual and real costs of owning a hybrid. I mean, you've already touched on some of the information and so on, but I thought it was good to know because I was sure that, you know, it wasn't an easy gain on, you know, on an investment and so on. But I was kind of curious also, is there any information so far on crash tests and so on for these hybrids?
The government, to my best of my knowledge, has not crash tested these hybrid models. Unfortunately, I take that back. The government has crash tested it, but the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety has not. We put a lot more stock into the IIHS. We think their offset crash tests are much better. But the government did crash test a Toyota Prius, and they came out a 4 out of a 5-star rating, which isn't bad. Plus, the Prius has optional head and side airbags, so that should do you well in terms of safety. And it also is available with stability control. I mean, we think stability control is a great feature. It is a vital for, especially if you're buying an SUV and any kind of car with a higher center of gravity. The government has also crash tested the next edition of the Honda Civic, and that also did well in the IIHS. Tested the Civic. Now, they didn't necessarily test the Civic Hybrid, but we can really take the crash test that we get from the IIHS and transfer them over to all models, unless we hear otherwise. But so far, the crash tests for the hybrids look good. Fuel economy looks good. They're green vehicles. There's no tailpipe emissions when you come to a stop. There's a lot going for hybrids. However, they do cost a little bit more than a standard model, and it takes a while to make that money back. But all the hybrid models for sale in the U.S., except for the Honda Insight, are all recommended by Consumer Reports.
I was also wondering, this is probably not along your line, but is there anything, like on the Internet or wherever, where a person could look up to see an actual difference in energy usage, I mean, to produce this versus producing a regular car, so a person can get an overall view of, you know, 5 years, how much plus or minus has there been of energy consumption? You know what I mean? Even in the extra construction of such a thing as that.
I'm not sure that exists. There are numerous hybrid websites out there. I mean, hybrid buyers are fanatical. If we say anything negative about any hybrids that we test, we get all these angry letters and phone calls and emails, and they think we've sold our soul to the devil. But I'm sure that there are hybrid websites out there that could probably break that down. However, you can just look at the fuel economy test that Consumer Reports does and kind of do your own analysis.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't have any of the hybrid websites off the top of my head. But I'm sure they're out there. They're fanatical.
I really appreciate it. I, like I said, I enjoy that article that gave real costs over time. I appreciate that.
All right. Great. Thank
you
very much.
Thanks for the call. Let's go on here to talk with someone in Urbana. This is caller on line two. Hello.
Yes. My question was more in reference to mileage. And it seems to me in a time with elevated fuel prices, Toyota has discontinued a more proletariat model, the Toyota Echo, that I believe got 40-plus miles to the gallon, and it came in at about half the price of, say, their Prius. And I wondered if more car makers weren't looking to recreate something like the Echo. And the other question that I had was E85, do any automakers have plans to make a, you know, a again, a commuter car that is both, you know, 40 plus miles to the gallon that maybe isn't a hybrid that also runs on E85, and do any of the hybrids currently run on E85, or is that in the future? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. None of the hybrids run on E85 right now, but General Motors is making a big push to go there. We're not sure that that is a great solution because it takes a fair amount of energy to produce E85. And we don't necessarily think it's a long-term solution, and all the land that it takes to grow the corn and whatnot. The other questions about mileage, I couldn't agree with you more. I get letters from people say, you know, I bought this tiny Geo Prism or Geo Metro back in the early 90s. It had a three-cylinder engine. It got 45 miles per gallon. It ran like a top. Why don't automakers sell cars like this anymore? You're absolutely right also about the Toyota Echo. That was a great fuel economy car. It cost a lot less than all these hybrid models. Toyota is going to come out with a smaller model called the Yaris. That's going to be available within this calendar year. It's going to have a small 1.5-liter four-cylinder engine, about 106 horsepower. So this car will definitely be geared to fuel economy. And as much as we do love hybrids, in some states, they have the HOV lanes where hybrids actually qualify, where you can drive a hybrid Lexus RX 400H SUV, and you're getting maybe 22, 23 miles per gallon. But a Honda Civic without the hybrid system is getting, you know, 35 miles per gallon, and you're not allowed in those HOV lanes, which makes no sense to us, by the way.
Yeah.
So you bring up a great point, and some of the small four-cylinder cars get fabulous fuel economy. In our ratings, in our April issue of Consumer Reports, we have a fuel economy, overall fuel economy for the Honda Civic, regular non-hybrid model with 28 miles per gallon, the Ford Focus with 24 miles per gallon, the Mazda 3 with 27 miles per gallon. This is overall, so combined a highway and city. And these are great fuel economy cars. They don't cost as much as hybrids, and they're highly recommended by Consumer Reports.
Okay, let's continue. And the next person here is calling from Moultrie County on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello. We're on our third Ford Taurus, and we've had great luck with them, but they're phasing it out. And we're thinking about, you know, what we'll buy if we have to get another one. We like the looks of the Fusion. Do you have anything to say about it? It's brand new.
Sure. We actually just tested the Ford Fusion. We really like this car. We really like the way it drives, especially the V6 models. Very responsive, very comfortable. We think the ride and handling and interior room of the Ford Fusion is very good. It's an excellent first effort by Ford. We think the engine is a little bit noisy and the turning circle is not quite as tight as it could be. But we have to wait until the next survey of Consumer Reports subscribers to find out what kind of reliability you might be getting from this. Usually first-year models, especially from domestic manufacturers, can come out with subpar first-year reliability, so we're kind of holding our breath with the Fusion. But I'll tell you, it tests really nice. It's a good-looking car. You know, we keep our fingers crossed to hope that that Ford has worked the bugs out in the first year and that the reliability information will come out at least average or better. If it does that, then the Fusion is going to be in good standing.
Good. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. And back here to Champaign for another caller. This is line 3. Hello.
Good morning. Grateful to be able to talk to you, Mr. Quincy. I'm looking to replace my 1996 Sebring convertible, and I bought the issue of the magazine for $6, and I was a little disappointed that you didn't have a single review of a convertible in there. But what can you tell me about the 2007 Mitsubishi Eclipse Spider convertible?
Well, actually, we do have information about convertibles. We have ratings for convertibles and roadsters in the ratings section, pages 28 and 29 of the April issue, and also in all the profiles when a model is made with a convertible or a coupe version, such as the Ford Mustang. We do talk about it because we've tested both models. So actually, there is a great deal of information on convertibles in the April issue of Consumer Reports. I can tell you that what we've learned about the Mitsubishi Eclipse, we've tested the coupe version, and we're pretty much underwhelmed by it. It's pretty heavy. We tested the four-cylinder model, which was a little underpowered. The driving position was uncomfortable. The dashboard is really huge. The vision out is not very good at all. I think Mitsubishi cut a few corners with the Eclipse. We haven't tested the Spider version, but certainly on a warm, sunny day, putting the top down on any car is a pleasure, and you can forgive some of the other faults. But I think that there are better choices out there in terms of getting a convertible than the Mitsubishi.
If you need a back seat, and I do just for the golf clubs, not for the kids anymore, is there anything that can compete with the Chrysler Sebring?
I would take a look
front
at
front wheel drive.
it has to be front wheel drive. Okay.
Yeah.
I would look at the Mini Cooper S. Great fun to drive. We really love that car. The Chrysler PT Cruiser convertible is also fun. Has a little bit of room in the back seat. The Toyota Camry Solara is also a well-rounded convertible. Not too exciting to drive, but very comfortable. Very luxurious interior. Those are the ones that are recommended by Consumer Reports in terms of having a slight back seat. But as you know, as the owner of a Chrysler Sebring convertible, the back seat is still pretty small.
Yeah. Yep. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, thank you. And now we certainly, the lines are free. We have room and time for many other callers. If you have questions about cars, new, used, the guest this morning in this part of Focus 580, Michael Quincy. He's automotive content specialist for Consumer Reports, and he's the guy that is mainly responsible for making sure that all of the automotive data and information is up to date for Consumer Reports Online, for their special publications, and for Consumer Reports Magazine. And if you're thinking about buying a vehicle, new or used, one thing that you might want to take a look at is the April 2006 edition of Consumer Reports. It's their annual auto issue where they rate new cars. They have some information here on used cars, those that they think are good and those that they would suggest you might want to avoid, and a lot of other information, things that you might want to think about when you're buying a vehicle. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. I was really struck by here. There's one section where you talk about the fact that in 2005, last year, the average new car sold for more than $28,000, and which to me is just sort of a staggering amount of money. And of course, you know, if you have the money and you want to, you can spend a lot more than that. This gets me thinking about the fact that now it seems that more and more people I talk to, they've just rejected the idea of buying a new car, and the strategy that more people seem to be going for is to find a recent model car. A car that has a good reputation for reliability and longevity, that doesn't have a whole lot of miles on it. It seems to have been taken well care of. Get it checked out by a mechanic. And more and more people, it seemed to me, to be embracing this idea of not a new car, but say one that's, if you're lucky, 4, 5, 6 years old, maybe not real high mileage, and seems to be in good shape and go that way. Because you pay so much right up front and the depreciation is so fast. It makes me wonder, who buys new cars anyway?
You bring up a great point. I'm so glad you brought this up. I mean, the best car value out there right now are used cars, and the April issue of Consumer Reports has just tons, reams of data on the best and worst used cars. We have the famous, they call them dots. Internally, we call them blobs. They're all the charts with the red and black and white circles all around them to show you what trouble spots you can find in certain areas of the car. And a good, reliable used car is a great buy, especially if you need a second car, a third car, what have you. And the cars today are built so much better than they used to. Even average reliability cars are holding up well. And in the April issue of Consumer Reports, we have used cars, suggested used cars from less than $6,000 up to $28,000 and up. So you can certainly save a lot of money buying a good used car over a, like you said, a $28,000 new car.
Yeah, that just it seems to me just so much money that it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and if you're working in public radio or you're a nonprofit organization like Consumer Reports, who can afford this stuff?
Yeah, well, yeah, we won't go there. We have several other callers here. Let's talk with them, starting with someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. First of all, I'd like to say that I have never purchased a vehicle without first using Consumer Reports, and I very much appreciate the information they provide. But I recently had an experience with a Toyota Solara that bothered me a little bit. I had a problem with oil gelling in the engine, and it required a $5,000 rebuild of the engine. When I got on the Internet at the time, I found that this is a well-known problem of the Toyota Solara and some of the Camrys, where people, with 2 and 3 year old vehicles are requiring $5,000 to $8,000 engine overhauls because of this problem. And I went back and looked at Consumer Reports for, I have probably 10 years worth. And to be honest with you, and perhaps I missed it, I never found any mention whatsoever of this problem. And that began to bother me a little bit. I know that you folks have been in love with Toyota Camry for years, and I'm starting to wonder if some of the concerns that people have expressed about your having a bias towards the Japanese cars might not have some validity to it, since, as I said, I saw absolutely no mention of this problem going back several years. And even in the issue that arrived recently, still used models and such, it's a very highly recommended vehicle. And I just wondered if you could comment on that, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Sure. My sympathies to having to get your engine rebuilt. I'm really sorry to hear about that. It is a fairly well-known issue among some Toyotas. It's mostly the V6 engine, the 3-liter V6 engine, that they had some gelling problems with. It was not as widespread as some people thought, but... In terms of our coverage of this, about 3 or 4 years ago, we did an article about this gelling problem to put them in the right perspective. And it didn't infect every single 3-liter V6 engine Toyota made, but it did occur in some of them. In terms of our reporting on the reliability of this engine and the Solara in particular, we don't make this information up. Consumer Reports surveys its subscribers. We have over 6 million website and magazine combined subscribers. We ask them if they've had any problems with their car over the last 12 months, and a problem can be serious downtime, safety-related issues, or just all kinds of breakdowns. And the data that we've received from our subscribers has shown that even going back to 1999, the V6 Toyota Camry Solara has had very few engine problems. When it comes to engine gelling, there's also some amount of, I don't want to say blame, but there's certain responsibility that has to come from the owner in terms of regularly changing the oil, using a decent grade oil, doing it within the manufacturer specifications recommends, and that can make a difference in terms of how long your engine lasts. But again, according to our data, we don't see widespread problems of this engine, although I have heard of it, and it's not uncommon. But what Consumer Reports does is we try to help you improve your odds. I mean, there's no guarantee that a Toyota Camry is going to run flawlessly, and on the other hand, there's no guarantee that a Chevrolet Trailblazer will be awful. According to our data, the Chevrolet Trailblazer has all kinds of problems, but you could buy one that could run perfectly. We're just looking at the odds. That's all we're doing. And again, we get experiences from our subscribers, and we report the results. We don't make this stuff up.
Yeah. I guess for what it's worth, one thing you might mention, and again, I'm not intending to boost Japanese cars, but one of the things that you have here is you've plotted out over time the problems that that people have with their cars as they age, and that what you find is that the cars that age most gracefully are, in fact, the Asian cars, looks like, and it looks like of all of those, the Toyota is the best. And I read now with my great distress, because last summer I bought a used Passat, that the Volkswagen seems to be the worst of all brands. It ages the least gracefully, and of the imports, BMW is the best, Volkswagen is the worst, and the American cars, Ford, GM, and Chrysler, are sort of in the middle, but certainly the Asian manufacturers do the best.
Exactly. The manufacturers from Japan and Korea, they know how to build reliable products. They were basically, given a huge percentage of market share in the United States in the early 1970s, when the price of gas went way up and Detroit only built large, fuel-inefficient vehicles. And the story in Detroit was, well, you know, we don't build small cars because we don't make any money on them. So in walks in Japan, who has a history of building small fuel efficient cars, because the streets in Japan are narrow, parking is at a premium, and gas is expensive. So what do you get? You get small, you know, four cylinder cars. Toyota and Honda and at the time Datsun, which is now Nissan, they filled a need, and it seems like we're repeating history again. When the price of gas goes up, people don't want to buy fuel-sucking SUVs. They want smaller, more fuel-efficient cars, and Japan and Korea are in a position to take more and more market share away from U.S. Brands. But, you know, I mean, you can't tell me that no one in Detroit saw this coming. They tend to be short-term thinkers, and they're focusing just on profitability instead of market share.
Okay, let's go.
So what are you going to do about that?
Let's go on. We'll talk with Champagne caller next here, line number two. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I was just wondering, how come on, like, all these reports, no one ever mentions Hyundais? They have, like, a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, and I've driven one for the past 8 years, but you never hear anything about them.
I think Hyundais are the Hyundai brand is the one to watch. I think Hyundai has a lot going for them right now. They have a very aggressive product line. They have a redesigned Accent coming out. Consumer Reports recommends the Hyundai Elantra. We also like the Hyundai Tiburon. They're not completely out of the woods yet in terms of reliability. Some of their products are still not as good as the ones from Honda or Toyota, but we got the top of the line Hyundai Azera in our test fleet about a month ago, and this is a fabulous car. This is a car that's going to compete with the Toyota Avalon. It's a larger model, very luxurious inside. Hyundai is really on a roll, and even looking past the generous warranty that they have, a number of these products have done well in Consumer Reports tests, and we look forward to getting reliability information on the redesigned Sonata, which also did well in our tests. And again, that Hyundai Azera is quite a car for about $24,000 to $26,000.
Okay, how does the Elantra? How will those stand up again? I missed that part.
The Hyundai Elantra did well in our test. Has average reliability is recommended by Consumer Reports. However, we definitely recommend that if you're going to buy an Elantra, you find a model with the side airbag. Actually, side airbags are standard, so that's okay. You'll find that fine. But the Elantra is recommended by Consumer Reports.
Okay, that's good. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. And let's see where we'll go next. We'll go to line number three, I believe. That was someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hello. I have a 2002 Forester, and I really like that car, but I have a problem with the rear seat room. I have two children, one in a child seat, and it seems that when I'm driving, they complain about the room in the back, where my seat is back. So I've been looking at the cars to buy new this year. And I really like manuals, which the Subaru has, but I've been looking at the 2006 RAV4 with the V6 engine. And one thing I liked about that is it seemed like you have a lot of rear room. And I test drove the V6. So I was really impressed with that. So can you tell me something about that?
Sure. Actually, we're in the process of testing a four-cylinder RAV4 right now. We're going to test a V6 when we can get one. We haven't been able to get one yet, so I can't specifically comment on the performance, but certainly with 269 horsepower, the 3.5-liter V6 in the RAV4 is going to make this car very sporty, probably a lot of fun to drive. You brought up a good point about your kids in your backseat. I have two small boys, and some of the advice that we give to people is when you go car shopping, make sure you bring your kids and their car seats with you to make sure they fit in the back. But the RAV4 at our first look at it is very competitive. It's gotten a lot bigger than it used to be. It was certainly one of the first small SUVs, and the RAV4 is among the trend of crossover SUVs, and these are models that are built basically on car platforms. It gives them a slightly lower center of gravity, better ride, better handling, better braking. Consumer Reports really likes crossover models much better than truck-based models. And the RAV4 was one of the originals and continues to be very competitive. We predict the reliability of this model will be very good, as in all Toyotas. And actually, the RAV4 is available with a third-row seat. Now, it's going to be tiny. It's going to be a really small third row seat, but it will give you some a little bit more flexible seating arrangements if you're going to take your kids and maybe one or two of their friends someplace.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for the call. Next up is someone here who is on a cell phone. We will go to them next. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Yes, go ahead.
I was calling to see if you had a good recommendation for a low gas mileage van that's affordable and it seats eight or more people.
Eight. A small van that seats eight.
I'll hang up and listen. Okay.
And I think they were. I think they're interested in good gas mileage.
Right.
So they're looking for a van that gets good gas mileage that would seat eight people. That may be a tall order there.
That is a very tall order. Often we'll tell people that a certain vehicle will have three row seating and you can put people in there or you can put stuff in there, but you can't put both. And that seems to be the case. Great fuel economy and minivans are not necessarily, they don't necessarily cohabitate. The best advice I could give you would be the Honda Odyssey or the Toyota Sienna, and these are very competitive minivans. They both get about 19 miles per gallon overall. They both have average or better reliability. Both are available with side airbags, so it's a real good safety feature. They test very well in Consumer Reports testing. However, one of the other models that you might look into is a Mazda 5. And this is kind of a smaller version of a minivan. It does have available three-row seating. It is much smaller than the Odyssey or the Sienna. However, we don't have reliability information yet on the Mazda 5, so we can't give it a recommended rating yet. But it did very well in our tests. It's very comfortable, fairly fuel efficient, and, definitely one to look at, especially if you're looking for something that's a little bit smaller than the larger ones.
Yeah. One of your recommendations, your top picks, is the Toyota Highlander Hybrid. So this is an SUV, and it's an expensive vehicle. It's an SUV that costs more than $30,000. But I guess I'm wondering, for those people who feel that they really need to have a large vehicle like that, either an SUV or a minivan, and they're trying to get the best gas mileage possible, what sort of potential is there for a hybrid to put a hybrid engine in a vehicle like that and get some kind of reasonable gas mileage on it?
I think it's definitely possible. However, you have to look at how the car makers are approaching hybrids. Some approach it more from a performance perspective. Honda does a hybrid version of their Accord. They attach the hybrid system with the V6 engine, and the extra boost of the electric hybrid motor actually improves the performance of the Accord quite measurably. It's really quick. It's actually a lot of fun to drive. However, the 23, 24 miles per gallon that we got on our V6 Accord Hybrid was really not that outstanding and not much better than a four-cylinder model. So it really depends on the approach that they take. Toyota is going to be putting a hybrid system in their redesigned Camry for 2007, but they're going to hook it up with the four-cylinder model. So that's probably going to be much more of an emphasis on fuel economy than performance. So to answer your question, you could hook up a hybrid system to a minivan, but again, is it going to be a performance-based setup or fuel economy?
Okay. Our guest in this part of Focus is Michael Quincy. He's automotive content specialist for Consumer Reports. He is chiefly responsible for making sure all of the automotive data and information is up to date for Consumer Reports Online, for their special publications, and also for Consumer Reports Magazine. And if you're thinking of buying a new or used car, one piece of your research should probably be the April issue of Consumer Reports Magazine. It's out now. It's their annual auto issue where they rate new and used cars. And there's other information here, things for you to think about when you're looking for a vehicle. And questions are welcome, too. We'll get in as many as we can. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Champaign and line two. Hello.
Yeah, just a comment about the engine. I bought, in late 2000, I bought a 2001 Toyota four-cylinder. And I think the manufacturer's in fault there. They're all trying to boost how long it, in between getting oil changes. And so, I have it done every 3,000 miles or so. I think that's where they had a problem. So I got, for some reason, I don't know how many people other, but I got an extension up to 8 years on the engine. So I think that was the problem. Two people, they were trying to do the 5,000. I don't know what they were promoting at that time, but they were trying to get, you know, that you wouldn't have to change the oil except the local, you know, in terms of maintenance, you know, always recommend the 3,000 miles. And I think that was one of the issues. So anyway, that's just a comment.
You have a good point there.
All right. Well, would you suggest, Mike, that that people change the oil more frequently than manufacturers recommend?
Probably not. You have to understand that the manufacturers really know their cars better than anyone. I mean, even better than Consumer Reports, believe it or not. They put hundreds of thousands of miles testing their cars. They measure their engine wear to tolerance levels that are barely detectable. I would look at whatever goes in the owner's manual. If the owner's manual says you can do 5,000 miles in between oil changes and you have receipts to prove that you did that, then you have a good case if your engine goes wrong. However, if the owner's manual says 5,000 miles is fine and you insist on doing, you know, every 3,000 miles, and, you know, there's nothing to stop you from doing that, obviously. However, we would say it's somewhat of a waste of money. It's somewhat of a waste of resource. It's a waste of oil. I would follow whatever is in your owner's manual.
Okay, let's take another call, and this would be Champagne Line 1. Hello.
Hi, I had two questions. They're not really related, but one is about the new Honda Odyssey with the variable cylinder engine, and if it's worth the expense of that engine for the fuel savings that you may get. And the other question is, when considering the purchase of a car, do you repair a car or buy a new one?
Let me handle them one at a time. The Honda Odyssey with the flexible fuel engine, it really runs imperceptibly. You don't even know that the cylinders shut down under a light load, such as when you're driving on the highway or coasting down a hill. Half the cylinders will shut down to save gas. Dodge and Chevrolet have these in a number of their products. They call them displacement on demand or other names. But that system still produced about 19 miles per gallon overall, which is quite competitive for a minivan. Again, the Honda Odyssey is highly recommended by Consumer Reports. We really like this car. In terms of how much to feed an old car, I think if your car is consistently costing you money every month, $100 here, $1,000 there, it's going to turn into a black hole. I mean, you don't want to continue to pour money into an old car that is continuing to break down. Also, there's a safety issue. If you don't want your car breaking down on the side of the road in the middle of a snowstorm, you don't want your teenage drivers to drive a car that you're not sure if it's going to start up every morning. So you really have to balance out how safe is the car, how much money are you continuously putting into the car, and kind of weigh it out there, because you're not really saving a lot of money in the long run if you're constantly taking the car to the shop. You could instead take some of that money and put a down payment on a good used car, for example, and not have as much of a headache.
All right. Well, we'll continue next. Muncie, Illinois. This is line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My daughter just bought a Scion XA, and I was wondering what you thought of that, and if you know the relationship between Scion and Toyota.
Absolutely. Scion, for those of the listeners out there that aren't sure what Scion means, Scion is kind of an offshoot of Toyota. It is supposedly their youth brand. It's their attempt to get a younger buyer into Toyota dealerships. It's succeeding to a certain degree. I can tell you that Consumer Reports has tested the Scion TC, the XA, and the XB. And actually, we don't recommend the XA only because it really didn't do that well in our tests. We found that the engine was quite noisy. The ride was stiff. It was fairly uncomfortable. Acceleration was just adequate. About 30 miles per gallon overall isn't bad for this type, but it just didn't score high enough to get a recommended rating. However, there's nothing really wrong with it. It's not unsafe. It has a great reliability record. The fuel economy is decent. The price is very competitive. It's a nice, you know, small kind of a five-door hatchback. But it has to perform a little bit better to get a Consumer Reports recommendation.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And on again, next will be Terre Haute, line number 4. Hello.
Yes. Could you tell me, are there any vehicles other than minivans or large SUVs that have captain seats in the second row?
Whoa, that's a tough one. Not to the best of my knowledge. Captain seats, you have to get a minivan or an SUV or even a full size van to get something like that. There aren't a lot of cars out there with individual back seats. It's almost all, you know, connected as one long bench. So I'm afraid you're out of luck with that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's go to another Indiana caller here, line number 1. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. There are two questions. I think you've answered the first one, so I want to make sure. Now, the issue that has your recommendations on used cars is the April issue of this year?
Yes, the April issue of Consumer Reports should be, if you're a subscriber, you should have your issue, or it's on the newsstands.
Okay. Okay. And the second question deals with, in terms of statistics, the number of subscribers you have versus the number of people that actually answer the form on the paper and everything that you get your information from. Is it statistically important?
Sure.
Okay, so and since do you check it out later on, you know, to see the pool of people you're drawing from, that the all the correlations are still the same down the line afterwards? So that I was just wondering about that early guy who was concerned that he bought one of your recommendations and it went bad. And first thing I thought of is that if your pool of information is not what it should be, then maybe that account for it. But I thought probably what it was is that, you know, it can't be perfect, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, statistically speaking, there isn't an automaker on the face of the earth that can make a perfect car every time. There's just too many variations in the workers putting the products together, the quality of materials that you're going to get from your suppliers. Statistically speaking, we could not guarantee that any car is going to be absolutely perfect or absolutely awful. You know, we survey our subscribers. We have 6.2 million subscribers. It's a big survey base. We have PhDs that crunch the numbers that come in from this survey. They're smart enough to throw out all the extremes. When someone says a car is absolutely perfect, that's an extreme. When someone says the car, everything broke on the car, that's an extreme also. So they're able to get a sample size that is statistically relevant. And again, we got responses on over a million vehicles on our survey. I mean, the numbers from a statistician's point of view are very envious. These are numbers that can hold up. You can hold this up against anything out there. We think it's the best survey in terms of automotive reliability available. And again, we're independent. We're a nonprofit organization. We take no ads. We buy all of our own products, which helps us stay independent. People like to quote J.D. Power and other survey companies, but the J.D. Power's customers are the automakers. So there's almost an inherent conflict of interest there. We're beholden to no one, and we stay independent. We don't really care which car companies come in to the top or the bottom. We have no claim in this whole matter. People tell us their experiences, and we report it to our subscribers.
Well, thank you. If you had time, as Jermaine, I wish you'd explain to me how that deal works with J.D. Powers, where they use the car makers. Is it like the FDA relying on pharmaceutical?
You're talking about government and business, and I'm not going to even go there because that's a whole different can of worms. But in terms of J.D. Power, if the car companies want to use their survey results in their advertising, they have to pay a licensing fee to J.D. Power. If the car companies want to see the in-depth, detailed reports of J.D. Power survey, they have to buy the report. It's very profitable for J.D. Power, but the claims are, you know, I'm not going to say they're dubious, but they can't claim the same amount of independence as Consumer Reports because we don't have business relationships with any car companies.
All right, I want to try real quick. Yeah, one more caller, and that would be Champagne and Line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. I have a question about hybrids and minivans. Do you think they'll ever make a minivan hybrid?
I think it's distinctly possible. Certainly Toyota and Honda are heavily invested in hybrid technology. I think it could happen. I don't see it coming quite yet, but we'll see how the new Toyota Camry hybrid works out because Toyota can base a minivan on that platform.
Yeah, the hybrids that I know of, the people that have them really like them, but we need something that's the size of a minivan. So we've been hoping that somebody would do something about that.
Well, you know, keep your fingers crossed because, you know, Toyota and Honda especially are very smart in trying to figure out what people want even before they want it. So it's certainly possible.
Yeah, I went to the Ford place here, and they hadn't even heard of the hybrid practically, and they've been advertising the Ford Escape hybrid on TV, so I thought, well, surely they, and the salespeople were like, well, no, we don't have any information on it. We don't have any here to see or test drive or anything.
That's unfortunate. The Escape hybrid actually got about 26 miles per gallon overall in Consumer Reports test. Mm-hmm. But it tipped up in a government rollover test, which is the only reason we don't recommend it. So, yeah. And it's probably a little bit small for your needs if you're looking for a minivan.
Right, but I was just shocked that the Ford people were so unaware of their own product line. And obviously we're not looking at the gas pumps. You know?
Yeah, I think whenever new technology creeps into the automotive industry, it's not always embraced immediately. It takes a while for it to sink in.
Yeah, we're going to have to stop. My apologies for kind of cutting in on the caller there, but we're just at the end of the time. But again, if you're interested in looking at the magazine, it's the April issue of Consumer Reports. It's on the newsstand now. It's their annual car issue where they give you their recommendations for the best and the worst cars of 2006. Our guest here this morning, Michael Quincy, is chiefly responsible for ensuring that all of the data is up to date on Consumer Reports Online and Consumer Reports Magazine. He's their automotive content specialist, and thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thanks very much for having us on.